From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
This is the radio show for anyone who's ever tried to convince their partner to pretend to be an elf and kill some orcs. Come on, it'll be fun, honey. The guy's around. You can join in, kill some orcs. You don't have to dress up.
Good really. Luck with that.
This is a show called The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Normally with Trent and Mark, I'm one half of that equation. Mark is...
He's AWOL.
Well, where is he?
I don't know. Some school holidays, children. I don't know.
So we've enlisted my very good friend and brother-in-law, get this, Garth,
woo,
to come in and help us out tonight. Garth, what capacity do you normally assist the Dice Men?
Well, look, normally I like to think of myself as an executive vice producer, which really means, you know, trying to get an interview here and there lined up for you guys, making sure that you sound like you know what you're talking about, and putting the occasional post on Twitter, Facebook now, and generally just playing games with you guys.
Yes.
It's great fun.
Good luck with getting us to sound like we know what we're talking about. What are we talking about tonight?
Well, this week, like always, we're going to have an amazing show. I make sure of that, you know. But we're going to start, obviously, what we've been playing this week. So I believe you've been playing a bit of Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, yes.
And I've gone back in time through to the Triassic Age and finally got a chance to play Triassic Terror. We're then going to have a bit of a chat about Warhammer because you've ventured over to the dark side and into miniatures gaming, mm-hmm, which I know mm-hmm. we've been talking about a little bit. We're also going to talk about iOS gaming and mobile games because they're a massive part of our hobby. Then we'll do some news and, time permitting, you know, a bit of housekeeping.
But first, and most importantly, the new Machine Head album is on the way. So far, it sounds like this. Oh, that's a good start to the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Garth tonight.
Hello.
And Machine Head, Killers and Kings. It's a new song from their new album. Sounds pretty much like Machine Head.
Sure does.
In case you're not familiar. And that's from their new album, which is called Bloodstones and Pain, Murder, something.
Yeah, Death, Violence.
It's not called Sunshine's Lollipops and Rainbows.
I hear that's the follow-up.
Yeah. What have we been playing lately? Can I start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Battlestar Galactica.
Ooh.
Correctly identified by yourself. Yes. From Fantasy Flight Games. Back in 2008, this one came out. So it's a... I think it comes under the oldie but a goodie...
Exactly.
...sort of category.
Yes.
It's a semi-cooperative game which takes 3 hours to play, 3 to 6 players.
Yep.
Do we need to explain what the Battlestar Galactica series... is you hadn't watched until really recently?
No, I'd watched a little bit here and there, but the DVDs I got from yourself may or may not have been compatible in Australia for me to watch on.
Right, sorry about that.
So I've seen little smatterings of Battlestar, but not
the whole
game.
Fault if you insist on living in Region 4. It's really not. if you're not familiar, of course, this is the old series from the 70s, which is essentially the Book of Mormon in space. I think that's fair to say.
Sounds quite appropriate.
So in the board game version, players are choosing specialties from, you know, especially roles from characters in the TV shows, as your pilots, your political leaders, that sort of thing. And really all that sort of affects is the colour of the cards that you're able to use. And one of the players may or may not be a Fracken Cylon traitor.
Yes, we love the Cylons.
You love them.
I do, yeah. I love the secret nature of being a Cylon. It's right up my gaming alley.
So everyone's just trying to keep the Battlestar and the people aboard it alive long enough to eventually reach Earth, which is what the series is all about, except maybe the Cylons who are actually secretly trying to undermine everything. You've got on the board these three very cool-looking dials for your food, your fuel, and your population.
That's right.
If any of those reach zero, you're dead.
Game over.
That's it.
Cylons win.
And every turn, there's a crisis card, which comes in, which describes some kind of scenario from the TV show. And you've got to play cards that are color-coded to try and combat that. And everybody puts them into a secret stack. And then you flip them over, and only the cards of the appropriate color count. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
But the Cylons,
Well, they'll do what they can to mess it up.
Playing the wrong colour, that kind of thing.
Exactly,
so,
right.
So, look, we played... That's essentially the mechanic. It's rinse and repeat from, mm-hmm. from there on in. We played this with the Pegasus expansion, which I think helped.
Yeah.
Gave the Cylons more to do.
It did. It added a bit more variety to it. Obviously added another board onto the table, which makes it look even prettier. And, made the challenges a bit more challenging.
I think that if... You're not a fan of this TV series, though, and there's lots of images and art from the series. I think if you're not a fan of it, maybe don't bother.
No. Look, I had fun with it. I really enjoyed playing the Cylon role particularly.
You love it.
I really enjoyed the secret backstabby nature of it, but also the challenge that came along with, you know, wanting to do a little bit of good so that you're not a suspect, but then obviously messing people over really when it counted. And I must say that the last time we played... Mark, who was a Cylon, was particularly bad at that. You know, he was...
He's too honest a bloke normally. Yeah,
you could see him perspiring at the table, having to make these really challenging decisions that, you know, he was just trying to screw us all over, really.
It's a little bit controversial not sort of being completely and utterly in love with this game, because amongst board gaming circles, the Battlestar Galactica game is tremendously well regarded. But I just think it's a little bit repetitive. I think it's a little bit too bloated for what it is. It's also 6 years old now.
Mm.
And I think that, well, when it came out, it was widely regarded, because of the traitor mechanic that's in it, where one player is possibly...
Yes.
You don't know.
You just don't know.
If there's a Cylon or not. Yeah.
And a lot of games have taken that mechanic and just run with it.
You may also find out you're a Cylon halfway through the game.
You do,
All of a sudden. Mm. So because of that mechanic, people considered it really innovative, and it replaced an earlier game called Shadows Over Camelot, which had more or less the same kind of thing, but with an Arthurian Knights of the Round Table kind of theme. But look, since then, I don't know, this Battlestar Galactica felt slow and bloated and out of date, and I think there's better games around right now with traitor mechanics.
Yeah, I agree. I think it does stretch on a bit too long now.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly an inevitability about the last couple of goes where, really, you know, you can see what's going to be happening down the track and... there's only so much you can do because you are relatively limited in the options you've got.
And I think if you want to play a game with a traitor mechanic that's better, play the Resistance,
definitely,
which takes about one-tenth of the time. Play Archipelago, which, I mean, there's not much of a chance of a traitor.
No, but it's in there.
And also, even though, look, we haven't actually played it, I'm prepared to say this, that it will be better than Battlestar Galactica. That's the new game, Dead of Winter, from Plaid Hat Games.
Definitely. You know, universally really positive reviews. You look at, you know, all the normal websites and podcasts and what have you, and, yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they've hit this one out of the ballpark. So all we need is your copy, Trent. Any news on that, or are you just going to keep us hanging?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm waiting for that pallet of games to arrive into a port in Sydney somewhere. I don't know. Is the boat sunk in the middle of the Pacific? I don't know. It's out of my control, mate. I've got it on order. They assured me that it was going to arrive 5 months ago.
Yes. Welcome to my world. I had that same experience with Marvel Dice Masters, the eternally out-of-stock game.
Yeah, well, I think it's the same problem in that both of these games have been so popular. And these companies are in the US. They're looking after the US, which is their primary market, of course. And here we are down at the arse end of the earth.
Definitely.
Now, you've been playing lately?
I've been playing Triassic Terror.
Yes.
Who, you know, this game is designed by one of our favourite designers here at the Dice Men, Peter Hawes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so clearly we've enjoyed playing Francis Drake.
Yep.
And I think it's really one of your fantastic must-go-to games along the way. Now, what I want you to do, Trent, is close your eyes, cast your mind back 200 million years.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, you're
I
there.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast. Good luck with that, Garth.
But you, Trent, you're the alpha male of a small but robust herd of dinosaurs.
This is a lot like I do my parenting style.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. You're traipsing your way through the various habitats of the Triassic Age. You've got, you know, predators trying to eat you. You've got pterodactyls trying to swoop down and eat your babies. And all you want to do is survive. You want to make your own little babies. You want to, you know, become a dominant species. Is that too much to ask for, Trent?
Can I open my eyes?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Is it too much to ask for?
No, I suppose not.
No, so look, Triassic Terror, designed by Peter Hawes. Now, this game actually was initially released through Kickstarter. So this was in 2013 and actually came out before Francis Drake. Now, I was just doing a little bit of research, obviously just a half-assed amount.
Oh, my God.
I know. But the Kickstarter only raised $12,000 and only had 148 backers worldwide, which means that when this game was released, there were hardly any copies around and hardly anyone who was playing it.
But it went on to get a commercial release.
It did go on to get a commercial release. And then now what it's actually ended up winning is Best New Strategy Game in 2014 as voted by Games Magazine, which is quite a large gaming publication.
New, so, quote unquote.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so, new to them, obviously.
Definitely. But look, we've played it only a couple of times now, but what I really like about it is, unlike a lot of area control games, because that's what this is, it's area control, area influence with a bit of card drafting, only a very small percentage. This game really fits the nice niche, which is complicated strategy without being too overly thinky.
Yeah.
You know, you get to be able to enjoy it, play, as explaining the rules is a real simple experience.
Five, 10 minutes,
yeah,
I reckon.
We were able to learn the game.
It's all there on the table because you've only got to choose every turn one of like five or six actions.
Yeah, you get six different actions to do, and the way these actions work are really nicely divided up into two things that are just great for your herd. You know, you've got the opportunity to start a new environment, which really means just put a new herd on the table in a different environment. There are the four different environments to play. Or you've got herd growth, which really means all you're doing is adding to your existing herd. So that's great. You're not worrying about any other herds. All you're doing is taking care of number one.
Mm.
You've then got the next two choices, which are, you know, good for you, but also have a little bit of bad for the competition, which is what you want.
Yep.
Now, this one's hatch. Sounds pretty simple. You hatch some dinosaurs, but then you get to bring out the first of the predators, which is the pterodactyl. You get to move this pterodactyl, which is permanently on the board. You get to move him two places, and he swoops down and eats two little dinosaurs from one of your opponents, which is very satisfying, of course. And then you've got your herd migration. Now, I think it's fair to say that was probably the hardest part of the game to explain, which is where you're actually moving herds from one habitat to another.
Sure, but it made sense once you cropped that.
So, yeah, look, we only had to explain it, you know, once or
seven or eight times.
Yeah. Exactly right. We did have Mark, you know, in the room, so, you know, slowly, slowly. But again, that was great because you get to go into another environment, you get to spread your herd around, but most importantly, you get to drag a couple of the opponent's dinosaurs with you, and that's really nice.
And did we mention that you get to play this with little plastic dinosaurs?
Yes, you get to live every little boy's dream, and it's to play with dinosaurs that are little miniatures, and they are perfect. And what's great about them is you've got velociraptors where you get to eat each other, which is perfect, and then you get to bring out the big guns, which is T-Rex.
Triassic Terror. We love that one.
Yes.
All right, so that's what we've been playing lately. What else are we doing tonight?
Well, we're going to talk about you going into Warhammer.
Oh, my God.
And going and experiencing miniature gaming.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe we'll talk about that next because I've come back newly informed and, look, it was scary. Nay, terrifying. But I will come back with a thing or two to say about the hobby of miniatures gaming. That's coming up next at The Dice Man Cometh. Edge Radio 99.3 FM is the station you're listening to. The dulcet tones of Rye. As we talk nerdy. Talk nerdy to me, baby.
Wow.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Garth. Tonight, Garth, our special guest host, while Mark is AWOL.
Exactly right. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Trent, you had someone who you'd never met before, I understand, someone called Kyle, who is currently under the services of Good Games in Hobart here.
Yes.
Now, he came in, and all he wanted to do was have a chat about miniatures gaming, and all he found was a wall of ignorance. You know, he came in here expecting an intelligent conversation, and he just... You know, I think he found it lacking.
How is it that your description of this situation is simultaneously unfair and completely accurate?
Well, it's just part of my wonderful talent.
Thank you.
As the executive vice producer. Now, Trent, you manned up and you have now gone over to the dark side, as we mentioned initially at the start of the show, and you've dipped your toe, a very hairy toe, into the manly pursuit of miniatures gaming. So... what did you discover when you went and had an experience like no other?
Yes, the first installment here of 40K for 40-plus people. Look, I accepted Kyle's invitation to try a bit of tabletop miniatures. I felt a bit nervous, a bit scared, a bit trepidatious, primarily that I was going to get dollars sucked out of me straight away. And look, not to make light of it, there is this weird schism in the nerd gaming world between miniatures gamers who play with the little painted soldiers and basically everybody else.
No, that's not entirely correct.
But and so I'm just going to talk about my first sort of experience in playing in this hobby. And so when I talk about this, I'm going to get things wrong. Okay, I'll explain that.
Well, there is a first for everything, isn't there?
Thank you. Bring Mark back. He's much easier to deal with. This is like a dummy's guide to miniatures gaming for those who've never actually tried it out before. So, look, first up, I think the thing you've got to acknowledge with Warhammer, which is what I played, is that this thing's been around for years. I mean, yeah. Warhammer Fantasy started in 1983.
Wow.
And Warhammer 40K, which is the sci-fi version, in 1987. Mm-hmm. So props to that. This thing's been an ongoing property. And there's, you know, not that many properties that have that kind of longevity.
No, I think it's a testament to, obviously, you know, having a great idea for gaming.
Yep.
Obviously, great marketability and making sure that it appeals to, you know, the demographic that it's trying to achieve.
And constantly being able to bring in new players through all of that, because obviously you're growing up and growing out of this stuff. Although, as we've been mentioning over the past few shows, Games Workshop, the company that develops all this stuff, is supposedly in some kind of financial strife.
Yeah, exactly.
At the moment. So 40K is now in its seventh edition, and I played with something called Dark Vengeance.
Whoa.
Because, of course, in case it's not clear, this is all very grim and horrible, and I think the tagline is, "In the future, there is only war." So Dark Vengeance is the name they give to their starter set.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds nice and welcoming,
doesn't it?
So this was Dark Angels, who are guys in like massive Iron Man mech suits versus the Chaos Space Marines, who are, I think, the same guys as the Dark Angels, but fallen over to some kind of evil elder god or something.
Yep.
It's a little bit of a supernatural element in there. One of the figurines I had in this game was called a Hell Brute. And I think the idea is that there's a guy trapped inside this giant suit of armor, but he's just like chained up in there. It's really horrible.
Oh, that sounds tough.
It's like a big heavy metal album cover come to life. Actually, what it reminds me of, the heavy metal comic from the 70s, you know, in France, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, I know all about that one.
Okay, sure. Yeah, the art of people like Mobius or Jodorowsky, and titles like Meta Barons and the Incal. If you know those, this is the sort of artwork that we're dealing with. So how do you actually play? All right, so you're playing on a I think it's a 6 foot by 4 foot is a standard size table. There's usually some kind of terrain on there, or it looks like a glorified train set.
Yeah, but it's a castle or a battlefield or, you know, some epic landscape.
We had some ruins and some craters. You are moving your soldiers in units. So there's a group of four or five of them. I think there's some rules around what size the units can be.
I'd imagine there would be.
But the idea is that the movement's generalized, so you're measuring it with a tape measure in inches. It's an American game. Actually, no, it's not an American game. It's an English game. I apologize. The idea is that each miniature can only be within a certain distance of each other, so you've got to move the units as a whole. That's the first thing you do. Then there's the shooting part of it. Sometimes you might have a special gun where you can only get to shoot if you don't move. If you've got a big like plasma cannon thing or something.
Yep. So the heavy artillery kind of thing.
Exactly. Yep.
Can't move.
Then there's the assault phase, which is basically where you charge at each other. And if you can close that distance, then it's just all in. All the bases of all the miniatures are touching each other, and then it's just full on combat. One thing I will say about this hobby is that you get to roll a truckload of dice.
Which we love.
Heaps of dice. Yes. Just lots and lots of D6s. It's three rolls just to friggin' hit anything.
Hopefully.
So you're rolling, I think, to hit something, and then maybe the weapon strength, I think. And then they get an armor saving throw, maybe.
Wow.
So
this is a complicated game.
Three hoops to jump through. And, of course, it's all based on these charts. And luckily, Kyle's got all this stuff friggin' memorized.
Excellent.
Like, he's just reeling it off. Oh, yeah, that's a plus three. That's a plus four to hit that. And I'm like, okay, whatever you say. And big rule books. In fact, the latest version, the seventh edition of Warhammer 40K, is three rule books. Actually, no, wait, that's not quite right. You buy it in a bundle. One of them is the rule book. They're all these glossy hardcovers. One's the rule book. One's the back matter, the flavor text. So the story of this universe. And the third book is just all painting.
Yep.
Right. It's just all the color schemes and you know, displays. And it's like a coffee table book for painting painting geeks. Look, some of the other rules that are involved, there's line of sight, where you actually have to crouch down onto the table to look to see if your miniature can see through that window where my guy is hiding.
Yeah, well, that's taking advantage of the 3D terrain. I think that's a good mechanic.
I did a fair bit of hiding in the terrain, I'm not too proud to admit. And there's a really great little mechanic called the scatter dice.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if you're blowing something up, you don't know where all the crap's gonna fly. So you literally roll a dice with arrows on it. And it's so obvious that, you know, you wouldn't actually think of it. So it's a fantastic little idea and something that could be incorporated into all sorts of board games like Descent or almost anything with miniatures. I got creamed.
Yes. Well, I dare say that this is a whole new avenue of gaming for you. To lose in. I mean, you've already covered your normal tabletop gaming. Let's take that history into wargaming and miniatures gaming.
Thank you. Would I recommend that people get involved
Good
in this?
Good question.
Look, I would, but I guess it's a similar sort of caveat to the collectible card gaming hobby. I think that the game comes down to 45% preparation, so building your army, depending on how many points you've got to take into it. 45% of it is then targeting. So on the table, who's shooting at who? Yep. And that means knowing the stats of every single miniature.
Yeah, yours and all your opponents, of course.
Wherever possible. And then the remaining 10% is just down to the luck.
Sure, rolls of the dice.
Exactly.
Is it fun?
It is. I had a blast, and I'd love to play again. One thing, there's a different... Because Warhammer 40K is just one system. There's lots of different miniatures games, and there's a style of play called skirmish play, where you don't have quite as many miniatures on the board. And Malifaux, that Mark was interested in, which is kind of like this weird West thing with all these monsters coming up out of the Louisiana Bayou, or this, you know, supernatural gators and stuff. That's a skirmish game. So you've only got like maybe half as many miniatures on the table, and each one can actually move individually.
Okay.
So it becomes more chess-like and a bit more tactical.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just the miniatures that you bring to the table on the day. And I mean, the painting...
Well, that's an art form, isn't it?
It totally is.
People will actually pay money to get these professionally painted or by people who are just incredibly talented at this art form.
But it's a really... There's a lot going on here to like, and I can totally see the appeal. The limitations are time and money. I mean, look, if I was 13, again, right? Not just mentally.
Cast your mind back again, Trent.
And if I had divorced parents who were trying to give me as much money as possible in order to demonstrate how much they love me more than the other parent,
yes.
I would totally be spending all that money on Warhammer, for sure. Absolutely. And just sitting in my room painting going, nobody loves me.
Oh, but all you've done now is you've gone out and bought half a dozen decks for Netrunner instead.
Well... Yes.
So as a fully grown, independently wealthy male, you've just chosen to invest the money in another pursuit.
There's only so many rabbit holes one has time to go down, I think. So anyway, look, the big thing I wanted to do with this was just get some idea of what actually goes into a game like this and just put paid to the schism that's there. And I think there is the schism there, but I think it's primarily one of age.
Mm.
So you've got old wankers like me. And basically everybody else, because there's a real game here. And look, if you do want to check it out, Kyle's there at Good Games, and on Tuesday nights they're having a newbies session, so you can go in and check it out. And I'll probably go back at some point.
Yeah, excellent. And there's a couple of photos up on the Facebook page that show you in all your non-bearded glory.
About to get absolutely creamed.
Exactly right.
Well, I had to shave the beard. Taking the beard off takes 10 years off my age.
I know.
So I feel I can hang with the cool kids.
You've got an even better face for radio now.
Okay, so that was Warhammer. You, on the other hand, barely leave the house.
Yes,
don't
that's
like
true.
Mixing with people.
Hate them.
Prefer to play your games online on the iPad.
Well, let's not necessarily say that's true, but I do think that mobile gaming is a massive part of our hobby, and we need to have a chat about it.
And we're going to talk about that next on the Dice Man Cometh. It's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. That's Buchanan on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. This is a show about board games and card games. If you've been listening and haven't figured it out, what the bloody hell are they talking about? And one thing that we have been talking about with this hobby over the well, many, many shows is the rise of digital gaming and the use of the iPads and Android devices and what have you within the physicality of the board games and card games that we like to play. But Garth, you just go one step beyond that and just totally play online digital stuff, touchscreens, all the time.
Oh, 24/7.
Well, I suppose, you know, rather than going out and spending 80, 90, 150 bucks on a game that you don't know that you're going to like, yeah, you can spend, what, $3?
$3, anywhere from nothing to a few dollars, but certainly, you know, as an entry point into a game that you're just not quite sure about, mobile gaming, the mobile platform is just ideal. Now, I guess the most recent example of that is a game that's been on my wish list for a while, which is Galaxy Trucker. You know,
yes,
it's one of Vlada's games, which, you know, you're guaranteed to have a lot of chaos and, you know, bits and pieces going all over the place.
Vlada Hlavatl, one of our favourite designers.
Exactly right. But this game is $80-$90. If you buy the large box, it's $120 plus.
Yep.
Now, what they've done, Czech Games Edition, is released a lovely mobile version of it. It's only been out for a couple of weeks now. But for the introductory price of, I think, you know, $6, $5 or $6, you're able to get the full game.
That's a lot for an app, though.
It is a lot for an app, but when you look at it and you get the full experience that it has to offer, I think it's well worth it. You know, we've got the full game, which is wonderful, and what I like about it is you can play a game in about 10, 15 minutes rather than the hours and hours that it would otherwise take.
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes just to do like half the setup.
Yeah,
when
exactly
you're playing
right.
The physical version.
And I guess in a broader sense, that's what I like about this platform is that you're able to just distance yourself from the math and the rules. You're able to just get straight into a game and have a bit of fun. Now, you know, you look at the more simple games that we love to play, like Carcassonne, which is basic mechanic, but translates really beautifully onto the mobile platform.
Yeah, look, Carcassonne, because I don't do a lot of gaming on the iPad. Carcassonne's the exception, though. I've played friggin' heaps of that, just hours and hours. And in fact, that is where I learned how to kill. Because I can slaughter people in Carcassonne. Love to slaughter my family and grind my 7-year-old daughter into the dust. Mm. And I have the app to thank for the ability to do that.
Well, isn't that wonderful? And you are able to learn those valuable life lessons on the comfort of your own couch, peace and serenity of your own home. But even, you know, even if you were waiting for the doctor's appointment or waiting to pick up the kid from school, you've got that spare 10, 15 minutes, you're able to pull out the phone, have a game, and there you go.
This is going to sound so completely... Because I'm such a Luddite. I really am. And because I like the tactile, physical nature of this anachronistic, analog hobby of ours, where you have to touch things, I kind of feel like the digital version somehow devalue it.
Yeah,
I know that's...
No, look, I can understand that. And look, the games, they do what they can to combat that by having, you know, pass and play mechanics where you'll have your turn on the device and pass it around to the next person sitting at the table. They'll have multiplayer, so of course you can get your friends around and have a game at your various homes and places all at the same time. You know, I guess you've also got to look at it from an environmental point of view, which, you know, these board games, they take up wood and plastic and all those bits, so...
Oh, you friggin' tree-hugging hippie.
Yeah, but, you know...
Pave the earth,
I
say.
Keep it electronic,
save the
trees.
Pave the earth with board games.
Hug the whales, all of that.
All right, so yeah, we are saving money by trying the apps before we might want to shell out for the physical version.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of apps, there's a lot of board games, and there's a lot of titles that people just don't know.
There is.
Can you recommend some for us, please?
I can, yes. Here's some I prepared earlier. But the great thing is about these is that most of the time we play the physical version anyway. And I look at the list I've created, which, you know, is Suburbia, number one. Now, that is a wonderful, easy game to play on a device because... Let's face it, there is a lot of math and juggling, you know, your population and what have you to get it right.
It's the game of town planning. If you've ever driven around your hometown and gone, this is stuff, I can do better than this, this is the game for you.
Yeah, it's SimCity the board game. But, you know, it takes that out and you can play a scenario in under 30 minutes. You've also got Small World, which is a wonderful introduction to this medium. It's a pretty simple game to explain, but again, there's so many bits and pieces that it can get a bit confusing.
Small World is such a great game, where it just very basic area control with some different races that you can play that have special powers. And I have to admit, I probably haven't played Small World in more than a year since I played the app a couple of times, and it was so good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And that's what I love about it, is it just makes it so easy, so accessible. And I can sit down with, you know, with my son or my partner or what have you and have that game instead of spending half an hour to an hour trying to explain the rules and not having fun.
Do you think there's something about pretending to be an elf on a computer screen that's more palatable than pretending to be an elf with a piece of cardboard in front of you, or a figure?
Far out. Well, that's a tricky one, isn't it? I'm spending all my time worrying about being a Star Wars character. So.
All right, so Suburbia, Small World, what else?
Well, look, you go for the big names. You know, we've already mentioned Carcassonne. Ticket to Ride, massive game. You know, they had the World Championships of Ticket to Ride only a couple of weeks ago in the Netherlands.
10th anniversary edition came out
not that long ago. It's massive, and expansion after expansion after expansion. Another favourite that I know you talked about a couple of weeks ago, Pandemic.
Mm.
You know, again, another game where the math and the bits and pieces can be a little bit fiddly, but it makes it a lot more accessible. You know, you've got your Meteor Euros, you've got Agricola, and I think you've got San Juan and Stone Age and a few other ones. But probably one I'm really looking forward to is, in about a week's time, they're actually releasing Sentinels of the Multiverse. Which
really?
Yeah, and the early screenshots and the little bits and pieces I've seen make it look fantastic, because it's done in a comic book format. It looks really lovely. And one of the criticisms I know you've had with the game is that a lot of the time you're playing the mechanics of the game rather than playing against the baddie. You're fighting the game.
Listen, Garth and I have played like so much Sentinels of the Multiverse. It's not funny, but it's really fiddly and mathy.
Mm.
And there's it effects stack on each other the more cards come out.
Yeah.
And you've got an AI that will do all that stuff for you.
Exactly right. Because I was thinking about this morning and just going, you know, you go on any given turn sequence and you might have to factor in what you as the first player has done, and then the next player and the evil overlord's, you know, abilities and any minions are out on the table and all of that kind of thing. So having a simple system that removes that and allows me to just focus on having fun, I think it's brilliant. And it also looks really, really nice.
So that's coming out soon?
Coming out. It's slated to be released the 16th of October, which is weekend of Essen, I guess.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. All right. Any other tips? Any other titles?
Yeah, look, there's a couple more. Elder Sign, which is another really good game. There's Forbidden Island, which I think for younger players is a really nice one to get
into.
That's
the one where you're trying to find treasure on a sinking island.
Exactly right, finding your treasure before the island slips beneath your feet. And that's really the ones that I thought were most accessible, most suitable. Low price points, 99 cents to a couple of bucks here.
Yeah.
And what I like about them, they've also got a really active online community. So if you want to go and, you know, not necessarily play with your friends, but just get a quick game in against a real person rather than robot number 7, you've got the ability to do that.
If I start doing this, though, I'm never going to finish another novel ever again. I'm going to be sitting up all night playing in bed.
Well, and as long as it's... Yeah.
And that's time I should be spending doing online shopping.
Exactly right.
Thanks, Garth. All right, listen, we've just got time to squeeze in a little bit of board gaming news. We'll do that next on The Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio. To and fro from Chiro, from right here in Taswija on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Trent and Garth on The Dice Man Cometh. We're just about to get out of here. Mark's been away this week. Mm. Before he left, he said to me, "I hope Garth sucks because I'm really worried about my spot on the show." Mark, you should be worried, buddy, after tonight.
I'm pretty sure his seat is safe.
Oh, we've been
awesome. But I'm pretty concerned when he chooses family time over, you know, board gaming.
Hey, listen, we've just got time to do a little bit of news from the world of hobby gaming. The big news, of course, is that the Essen Spiel is coming up, which is a huge trade and gaming fair in Essen.
Oh, okay,
In Germany. And that's happening on the 16th of October. Mm-hmm. So, look, I'm going to sort of look a bit more at that next week's show. Elsewhere, AEG has announced their Black Friday Black Box. for Black Friday on November 28. You know Black Friday?
I do know Black Friday. Ridiculously stupid prices. You've got to line up for hours, apparently, outside these shops if you want to actually go into physical space and buy your game at a retailer.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's not enough that we have Christmas. This is literally shopping as a holiday. Mm. Yeah. So it's... four surprise games inside a black box that's going to retail for $50 US. Apparently, it's going to be alternate versions of some of their hits or expansions for things like Love Letter and Smash Up or Trains. AEG has done Istanbul as well. Been a big hit this year. So, look, on one hand, this could be just a Black Friday cash grab.
Yeah, of course.
But apparently, this is going to be an annual thing that they're going to do. A blind black box, and you don't know what's in it, but you're guaranteed to get supposedly $100+ worth of value.
Yeah. Well, it's a good way for them to get rid of any excess stock they might have just filling out the back of the warehouse.
Exactly. To the world of Kickstarter, Bomb Squad from Tasty Minstrel Games. What is Bomb Squad?
So Bomb Squad is a cooperative game where you're all basically fulfilling separate roles, but ultimately controlling a robot trying to disarm a bomb, rescue the hostages, get the girl, all of those kinds of things.
It looks absolutely maddeningly frustrating.
Mm.
It's been successfully kickstarted, and it's going to be released in stores,
a
trade version of the game, in the second half of next year.
Yep.
Ditto Cthulhu Wars.
Well, the world needs another Cthulhu game, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yeah. Mm. Talking of your miniature war game, so this is wargaming in the Cthulhu world. Surprise, surprise. This did raise $1.4 million through Kickstarter purely because of how good the miniatures looked.
Of course, of course.
Will be released by Game Salute for retail early in the new year. Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay. The fifth edition?
Fifth edition, yeah. Yep. So the rollout of this has been largely successful up until very recently when a couple of the books have been delayed. The Dungeon Master's Guide and the first sort of big scenario, Rise of Tiamat, I think it's pronounced, have both been delayed due to some kind of quality control issue with the dead trees that they're being printed on.
Wouldn't get that in electronic gaming, would you?
Thank you. Well, I actually think that this is a complete disaster for Wizards of the Coast, because you've got the hardback books that you shell out quite a bit of money for.
Yeah, it's a small fortune.
Because they weigh quite a bit, and it costs a lot to ship that, and that's where the money comes in. And you've got that versus PDFs.
Of course.
All right?
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure are pretty cheap to view.
Yes. And cheap to download illegally as well, which is what a lot of people are unfortunately resorting to doing these days.
It's a shame.
Even if it is just to try things out before they pay the money for it. So it's quite a setback for them. Oh, we're running out of time. There's a new expansion for Core Worlds coming out. Age of Conan, the board game, is being dusted off and relaunched by Ares Games. Next year, they've bought the rights. They last did this with War of the Ring.
Oh, okay.
Dusted that off. So Age of Conan will be out shiny and new next year. And look, one little bit of Essen news. So hot right now is a game called Mythotopia from Tree Frog Games. Much, much delayed. It's a deck builder medieval fantasy theme that borrows mechanics from A Few Acres of Snow by designer Martin Wallace. So that's apparently finally going to see the light of day at Essen Spiel.
And I've seen a couple of reviewers talking about their most anticipated games, and it's certainly up there.
Yeah,
apparently A Few Acres of Snow had some broken mechanic where you could break the game. Obviously,
allegedly.
If it's removed that sort of game-breaking element, perfect.
Yeah. All right. So that's just some of the stuff that's going on at the moment. But like we said, Essen Spiel, it's all about the lead up to that. Hopefully, we're going to actually get to talk to somebody who's actually going to be there on the floor. So fingers crossed we can get that interview together. In the meantime, this has been Trent and Garth this evening. Mate, thanks for coming in and filling out.
Ah, pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'm pretty sure Mark's seat is safe, but it's always nice to fill in.
We'll get you back in another time. Lovely. This has been The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Catch you next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.